A groundbreaking moment in the history of netball. What an episode this is going to be. Welcome to Courtside, the official England netball podcast. Lindsay here, and yes, that was a massive opening statement, but 9 months on from when England Netball announced plans to relaunch the Netball Super League as a first step in its ambition to professionalise the domestic game in the UK, I'm excited to say that the dream is now becoming a reality. I'm so excited to be able to bring you the very latest news on what the new era will look like, from clubs to squad sizes, venues, and what you, the fans, can look forward to. You don't want to miss a moment. So let's do this. And who better to have with me on the pod to discuss Netball Super League 2025 than the managing director of the Netball Super League, Claire Nelson. Claire, welcome to the pod.
Yay! Oh, what an opening. You've got me excited. This is incredible.
Oh, it's brilliant. And this is really, really big news, isn't it? Let's start at the beginning. When we spoke last time, you told me that England Netball have an ambition to build the most competitive, commercially vibrant and captivating professional netball league in the world. Tell me where you are with that now.
Yeah, gosh, 9 months ago, I feel like we've been talking about plans, ambitions, possibilities for a really long time. This now is us moving into the reality of that. We talked about launching an open tender process, and it was open because we wanted to make sure that we had the clubs that were able to come on this journey with us. We knew that taking that step into the new era, driving advancements, was going to take more than what we do now. We're creating and bringing and delivering standards that we've never done before. That takes increased investment. That takes more resource. That takes a dedicated, focused, year-round business proposition. It takes arenas and geography, and there's a huge amount to consider. So all of our existing clubs have gone through a process of really assessing whether that's right for them, to go through looking at their own models and whether that's something that they can realise as part of this collective ambition that we all hold for the league. But also it was right for us to look outside of our existing clubs to see if there was anyone else that could join us on this journey. So it's probably felt longer than 9 months for everybody because everybody's wanted information, and it's been the hardest thing in the world to not be able to share with fans and particularly players that, you know, where we are and the decisions that we've been making. But it's also been absolutely critical that we've gone through this process thoroughly, because the only way this works is for us to have the right foundations. And those foundations are clubs and the centre, which is NSL Co that we've now incorporated. And for us as a collective to be able to move forward and take these big steps. We talk about it being a 10-year journey. We're sensible in our phasing. We've got a good business model. But ultimately, we're taking really big leaps because that's what we need to unlock the commercial power of our sport. But I'm really, really confident in the clubs that we have, and I'm delighted to be able to announce them and to be able to share where we've got to and to actually now start moving forward in this next step in our journey.
Go on then. Can you reveal the clubs that are part of the Netball Super League 2025?
Yeah, so our big news is that we are reducing from 10 clubs to 8. Some of our clubs you will be familiar with. So the clubs that we're taking with us on this journey are Leeds Rhinos, Manchester Thunder, London Pulse, LexisNexis Cardiff Dragons, Loughborough Lightning, and London Mavericks. We can talk a little bit more about that. And new for 2025 are Birmingham Panthers and Nottingham Forest Netball.
As in Nottingham Forest, the football club?
That's absolutely it. So we are bringing a Premiership football club into our league. So Nottingham Forest, for anybody that isn't aware, is owned by Evangelos Marinakis, and he also owns Olympiakos in Greece. Now, Olympiakos is a football team, but it's also a multi-sport model. So they very openly, quite recently, talked about a vision for Nottingham and said that actually, with a brand as powerful as theirs, I think they've got 1 million followers, fans all over the world, but actually what they represent and stand for in the heart of their city and their county is actually about inclusion. It's about reaching communities, and it's about doing that through the power of sport. And they realise that football is really powerful in that narrative, but also they want to reach more. And for them, what we were pitching for the future of netball, for where NSL is going, they absolutely saw that they could come to the table and be part of that journey. Their intention is to play every game in Motorpoint Arena, which we know from season opener is an incredible venue. And they have huge ambitions to really light up the Super League, but more importantly, to use that platform to really reach and engage communities and to get more people active and to get more women and girls active.
That's so exciting, isn't it? What a brilliant story that is. Let's just talk about the other two clubs that you mentioned there. And I'm going to start with London Mavericks, because obviously people know Mavericks as Saracen Mavericks at the moment.
Yes. So Mavericks is the Mavericks team that we know and love. Saracens took on ownership of Mavericks and they've done an incredible job there. But as part of this process, what they have now realised is that they want to focus on their core business, and their core business is rugby. So as part of this, they wanted to keep netball alive. And we had a conversation with Lucy Ray, who's the ex-chief exec of the Saracens group and who was very, very passionate about netball. She bought the netball club into the Saracens group, and she wanted to continue the work that she started in netball. So she has brought on another female investor with her, Olivia Hall, and the two of them are taking on London Mavericks, playing their games at Wembley. And for me, you know, again, with all of this, the same with Nottingham Forest, same with Birmingham Panthers, who I'm sure we'll talk about in a bit. But for me, having female founders and investors is really exciting and represents everything that we're trying to do here as a true women's sport. So I'm sure there'll be bits that look the same and will be familiar for fans coming on this journey. But having seen their plans, we're going to see a lot of really, really exciting stuff from them. And I cannot wait.
Oh, I just love that you're talking about female investors as well and sort of pushing the sport forward. That's brilliant to hear. Let's then talk about Birmingham Panthers. Tell me about that club, because we didn't necessarily have the Midlands. Well, there used to be Wasps, didn't there? And obviously Seven Stars as well. But now we've got Nottingham, we've got Birmingham in there as well. Tell me a bit about Birmingham Panthers.
Well, again, this is headed up by a female, Alison Kay. She has brought in new investors and has a huge ambition for the city of Birmingham. And you're absolutely right. You know, when we go back to the Commonwealth Games, I think 160,000 tickets were sold in Resorts World Arena for the netball, and it was just this incredible spectacle. So you're right, since then, you know, obviously sad that we had the demise of Wasps, but they were very, very successful in Coventry. And then let's look at Seven Stars, who in these last two seasons have really started to make huge progress and momentum on and off the court. They're getting significant fan numbers at Worcester Arena, and maybe we'll find out this weekend that they'll make top four in their first ever season. Moving into a professional era and filling arenas wasn't something that they were able to do. However, Alison, through Birmingham Panthers, has huge ambitions. She will be bringing games to the Utilita Arena. She's looking at actually developing her own arena, and that's something a number of our clubs are talking to around their future ambitions. We're not asset owning as a sport at the moment, and we want to be able to get there. But bringing Birmingham Panthers in is not at the expense of all the work that's already been done in the West Midlands. So they will be building on the legacy and the great work that Seven Stars have already started. They'll be taking games to Worcester Arena, and they want to spread across the whole region, which is fantastic. So yes, we want big arenas that we can play our games in, but Birmingham Panthers, they're going to be going around the region. They are going to be building new fans. They're going to be taking existing fans in the region with them, and they're going to be delivering some really, really exciting activity in the heart of the city in Birmingham, which is empty and untapped for us, and we know it can attract huge netball audiences.
I went to university in Birmingham, and there's a lot going on there. It'd be great to tap into that. And of course, we've got the final of the Super League this year being played in Birmingham as well. So exciting.
Absolutely. Our biggest ever. We're currently at 7,000 tickets sold, and that's without us even knowing who our finalists are. And I think after today's announcement, as well as we move into these final few weeks, we're looking to have a record-breaking crowd for NSL. So yeah, Birmingham is a great city, and we're delighted to be bringing netball to it through NSL.
I am going to come, like I say, to the other names that aren't on your list. But just before I do, I wanted to understand more about how the decision was made for the ones that you have selected. So did you have a criteria that teams, squads, clubs had to meet? Because you've mentioned the word arena quite a lot, and it feels like maybe the visibility is really important in this.
Yeah, absolutely. So we were very clear from the outset on what the relaunch league needed to look like. All of this is data and insight driven. This is about what are fans going to show up to, what is going to drive the commercial value of our sport that unlocks those revenues that propels our journey forward. All of this will come through broadcast revenues, sponsorship revenues, and ticket sales. It's what fans then decide they want to show up to. We have this massive, massive participation base. We talk all the time about 3 million people play our sport. We are at all-time high levels of membership. There is huge momentum around our sport. But still, what we're trying to do is change habits. We're trying to build fandom. And we're doing this with a largely, almost exclusively female audience at the moment. So in a world where women and girls aren't traditionally dedicating consistent time and money to being sports fans, we've got to look at what are those things that make them show up to it. How do we make value for money? And that's the big events. So all of these things really come down to our venues. We've got to move out of sports halls and we've got to move into bigger venues. We know that that's a phased approach. So from year one, all clubs must deliver a minimum of 2 big arena games for us. A couple of our clubs are going to be playing all of their games in arenas. And then year on year, we hope to increase that. All of this, again, then gives a great broadcast product and a great fan product. So actually landing on a performance program, increased standards for players, increased resource and expertise around business, commercial, digital marketing, hospitality, all of those things take investment. So the things that we've really had to scrutinize is, can you raise your investment and revenue levels in order to afford where we're going? Can you expand and enhance what you're doing operationally? Are you aligned to the vision and ambition wholly to take on professionalization? And so there were some really, really difficult decisions made by clubs, but also through by the panel through this process, really, really robust process. So a lot of decision making, but I think when you see understand the clubs that have been awarded places, it should give everybody comfort and confidence that we have the foundations with which to build upon. Because as I've said recently, we're doing this on our own. Like, we're backing ourselves and we've got amazing people around the table now working together on this, but we don't have a big cash rich male sport federation benefactor. So we are raising our commercial value. We are bringing new partnerships and investment in, but we're having to do it smartly. That's why getting the clubs right at this point was absolutely critical. And we know that there's going to be disappointment with some of the decisions that are made. And I'm sure we've talked about that. But ultimately, even those clubs exiting, they understand that this is the right thing to do for the league moving forward. And if we didn't make these decisions, then there was absolutely no way we could take the step forward and deliver the product on and off the court that players, fans want.
Well, let's talk about that then, because there are some big names missing from the list with a really rich netball history. The likes of Surrey Storm, who've won the league twice, of course. Team Bath, who hold the record for the most Super League titles. And Seven Stars and Strathclyde Sirens, the four names that are currently in the league that are not in Netball Super League 2025. That'll be really tough for the players and for the staff. And of course, for the loyal fans. I mean, you've sort of worked through your criteria of what you selected the clubs that have made it for us there, which is great. But when we think about the UK, you know, Team Bath covering the whole of the Southwest, that feels like a bigger mission.
Yeah, Team Bath's a difficult one, because you're absolutely right. The Southwest is a huge, huge area, and there is massive participation there, and they've got a really big fan base. And with all of this, we have said, you know, we stand on the shoulders of everyone, every club, even, you know, Northumbria and, you know, Wasps, everyone that's contributed to this point, we stand on their shoulders and we will honour their legacy as we move forward. Team Bath is a difficult one because there is so much going on in terms of netball in that region. So we are actually still working with them to see how we can keep the pathway alive down there. Part of when we were going through this process, we looked at Bristol, and Bristol is potentially going to get two arenas in the future. Now, at the moment, that isn't secure enough for us to make an award on and for them to have put that into their tender. And we all understand that. However, we are working with them to explore options for the future there. I think with all of this is netball fans will be disappointed to lose their club. And we understand that. Our players, our coaches, our best players and coaches are still going to exist in this league. They're going to exist in a league that does better for them, that's a better program, that on and off the court. We're going to make all of our games available to view. We're going to have more than 50% of games played in arenas. We're going to build this incredible digital proposition that enables you to engage all year round and follow your favourite fan. So to be a netball fan, to be a Super League fan, a fan of a player, a fan of clubs, that's going to enhance. But we do understand the difficulty that will come with losing your club, and I understand that probably better than anybody at this moment in time.
Yeah, because you've got such a big connection with Sirens. That's basically a family club for you, isn't it?
That's my baby. That was, you know, I'm in this role and I'm realizing our ambitions are leading us on this journey because of what we achieved in Sirens. And to this day, I have, aside from my children, have never been proud of anything we've ever done. You know, that what Sirens did was actually set the bar of what professionalization could look like. From that first game in a major arena with a celebrity match beforehand and 4,000 people cheering us on, to record-breaking levels of commercial sponsorship, to the most creative and innovative marketing and digital campaigns, great sponsorship, huge signings. Like, we understood and set the bar for what our sport could and should look like. And a lot of that will be realized on another scale again moving forward. But again, I understand that what is required to be part of professionalization is huge. And despite everyone's best efforts or intentions, not everyone could meet that. And they understand that, we understand that. And as difficult as it is, it's also, we have to make a change and we have to set new standards. And we can only do that with the entities that are able to realise that financially.
Can I ask you, is that why you have made this announcement now? Because when I heard this was coming, I thought, gosh, that's an interesting time to announce this move, because we've still got a couple of rounds left of the regular Super League season. We've then got a semi-final and a final, and there's a club, Seven Stars, that are not going to exist in the same way, that might be making history. Are you announcing it now during the league to allow fans, like the Sirens fans, time to sort of really appreciate their team before the end of this league?
Absolutely. And honestly, if we could have made the announcement earlier, we would have done. And I think, you know, it's no secret that the players have really wanted to know this information. For them, mostly they want to know, what does my future look like? You know, what does this mean in terms of clubs? Is my club in? Are there new clubs? So what are squad sizes? So we've really worked closely and with the NPA and listened to them, that they've wanted that information. Also, as you quite rightly say, exiting clubs who start to play some of their final games, home games, sorry, from this weekend, they wanted the opportunity to be able to say to their fans, this is our final moment and let's celebrate together, and to not have missed that. And then for new entities, they've got to get going. So our signing window for players is going to open after the grand final, which is later than we would normally do that. So that we've got this kind of level playing field and everyone can go out. And I think it's going to be very interesting to see what happens in that. But they're starting from scratch. So they've got to recruit. They've got to recruit people. And so actually, for a number of reasons, this really is as late as we could have gone. And there's a lot of work to do. So, yeah, I know it might seem a little bit strange, but I think it's the right thing for us.
Let me pick up on a couple of massive points that have just been dropped into the conversation as we've been going along. So one was broadcast. I'm going to come back to that, because you just casually said all the games are going to be available. And my ears were like, oh, amazing. So let me come back to that one. But the question that I'm going to ask now is about players, because you were talking about it there. All the players at the moment are on one-year contracts, which puts them on a level playing field for this new recruitment window, which begins immediately after the final, as you've just told us. Tell us about squad sizes and tell us about the big thing around professionalisation, which is salaries. I think everyone's going to want to know what this means. Are the players going to be paid as professional athletes? So these are the really big questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a phased journey to professionalisation. And as I said, with all of this, if we get the product right on and off the court, then we unlock the commercial value of the sport. It allows us to then to go to market for greater broadcast revenues, greater sponsorship revenues, more tickets. And all of this then gets reinvested back in and gets reinvested back into players, to people, to infrastructure, to the product. So the quicker we can unlock the commercial value, the quicker we can get to being able to reinvest more. So we will be paying players more. I guess our other big piece of news is that we will be moving, reducing our squad sizes from 12 to 10. So again, we talk a lot about fewer, bigger, better. Okay, so this is really do less, but make it bigger, make it better, and allow that to unlock, and then we can grow from there. We've got more eyeballs on our sport than ever before, more people tuning in, we've got more sellout games, everything's up. However, we've also got one of the biggest goal differences than we've ever had. So as much as we've got really tight competitive games, there's also huge blowouts. And when we know we've got that, what we're seeing is people are making, fans make an assumption about which is the tight game to go to and which might not be. So that really affects club ticket sales. We also see with our viewing figures, although they're up, that actually they are less inclined to watch for longer and games that blow out. So all of these things. So then people say, how do you disperse that talent and how do we make that work? So the reduction of clubs helps that. But what we're also introducing is a new transparent salary band. So my thing when I came in and I looked at this is I also noticed that players of maybe similar caliber, similar court time, were maybe paid different levels. And there's different reasons for that, right? Because we're not fully professional. But I wanted to make sure that if you're doing the same job somewhere, that you are getting paid a similar salary. So we are introducing a salary band that it creates a more even, transparent framework of pay. That then should then drive those players to look across the league to think, where am I going to be part of this 10 that's going to be on court? These players are going to be in an improved program and they're going to be playing a higher quality standard of game week in, week out. This should drive real uncertainty of outcome. Thrilling to these players are going to be in an improved program and they're going to be playing a higher quality standard of game week in, week out. This should drive real uncertainty of outcome. Thrilling to the wire games. We talk about that all the time. And with all of this, we are doubling what the current minimum payment is, and we will be increasing the minimum average salary by at least 60%.
Is that a sort of level playing field across all the teams? Do the clubs get a sort of proportion of money and everyone has the same? Like, how does that work?
So we've got a salary collar and cap, and that's where all of our players will sit in that. So we've increased the collar, which is, so we've risen the minimum. We've then created a salary banding. So there's levels in that. So a club could choose to pay at the bottom level and the top, but it's a window of transparency and fairness that enables players to be remunerated for the job that they're doing in a better way. All of our top players will be in this. This will be great for our international athletes, our roses. I will say that we're still retaining our two overseas players as well. We think that's important for the vibrancy of the league. We love being really diverse, and we think that that also helps all of our athletes. But that average is going to significantly increase, and that average will increase by 60% if every club just pays the minimum. Where we will start is that everyone will be on basically a part-time, like a 0.5 FTE. And that enables them to, for those that are doing dual roles, because we know that there are people that are teachers and lawyers and doctors, there are students in there. We've always said this is about choice. It's about a phased approach, making what the situation is now far better, but doing that in a way that still enables those that are doing other things to move on this journey with us. So that's where we're starting. We've always said if we're reducing and improving what happens at the top, so that this really is the best of the best in this elite competition, what sits underneath it is then really important. So we will be launching a new league, which will underpin the Super League. I think we're still like named TBC, but basically this will fuel our future talent. So this will be an underpinning league of the Super League. It will deliver the next layer of elite competition. It will build, develop and prepare a greater talent pool of not just players, but coaches and officials to be able to perform at the highest level. From this competition and this pool of players, that's where the replacement players can come from if we need it as well. So actually, you've got that real competition for places in there. It's a place where maybe returning players from injury or maybe pregnancy can also compete. And it's absolutely going to be that incredible competition which fuels into and creates the successful, sustainable competition at the top. So loads going on around performance, really exciting. And hopefully it's going to give us, from day one, a really, really exciting and competitive league.
And I'm guessing that league that sits underneath the Super League, that wouldn't be salaried. It wouldn't be sort of professional.
No, it's not salaried, but any players then that have to get called up into the Super League, they'll be remunerated. So what an opportunity for like young, talented players. And again, this for our Roses fans is a fantastic opportunity for them to kind of see that future talent, to see how they're developing. But for everybody, you know, in these leagues, like you're basically, that's your showcase. You're on trial every single week looking to get that step up. So yeah, for now it's not salaried, but absolutely if you get called up, you will be remunerated and that's your opportunity to compete in the newly relaunched Super League.
And I bet that's really good for players to hear, because you have talked about going from 12 down to 10. We're going from 10 teams down to 8 teams. It feels very much like the Australian setup, I have to say. And obviously, at the moment, that is a professionalised league. It's sort of the world leader at the moment. But we want to come and challenge that, no doubt, no doubt.
Yeah, and I actually think with the launch of our new league underneath Netball Super League, I actually think we're coming in with something that is world leading. You know, a lot of this is still a work in progress. And when people wonder why we haven't announced things when we have, it's because we're literally live taking this, you know, working on this information. On Tuesday this week, there was a group that met, which has, you know, everyone from Jess Thirlby on it, Tamsin Greenway and our, you know, Super League coaches on there. And they're all working together to and the MPA contribute to that. Everyone's looking at what is right. Let's take our learnings, let's take our insight, and let's develop this incredible product that is going to fuel success on the domestic and international stage in the future for us. So yeah, it's exciting. It's a work in progress. And you know, if this is how we're starting, isn't it exciting to think where we can go?
Oh, it really is. It really, really is. And I understand it's going to run at a similar time to the Super League now in terms of the year and the international window as well. But obviously, I'm a broadcaster and I'm actually going to commentate that arena game for Manchester Thunder against Plymouth.
Oh, exciting!
Which is brilliant. And also, you know, the atmosphere at those games is like nothing else.
Especially at a Thunder game. Especially when they've got their drums. I mean, there is no one noisier than a Thunder game. So I think they need a quiet corner, actually, at their game. Sometimes they just need to, just because the noise and atmosphere is incredible.
I tell you what, I need to be in that quiet corner, because sometimes, you know, I'm trying to listen to the COCOM and I'm thinking, I have no idea what you just said. But it is wonderful and we're aiming for more of that. But tell me about broadcast, because you did say, and I'm going to hold you to this, every game will be viewable.
Yeah, so we said that when we announced our new broadcast partnership this year. We'd had a little line in there, and from next year. And look, let's you know, address the elephant in the room. There's been lots of comments on our broadcast this year, but I will tell you something, that the strategy that we set out to do is absolutely working. We know that to appeal to a female audience and a younger audience, we need to make our content accessible, which Sky Sports YouTube and BBC iPlayer has done. And what we've done is we've driven a 53% increase in viewers. I mean, the numbers are significantly up. And what's really exciting, we also, when we released some stats recently, we put that there is a 72% female audience. Now, to all of us in netball, we're like, duh, obviously, because it's netball. Actually, in broadcast terms, the next sporting property that has the highest level of female viewership is tennis, and that's just over 50%. That is incredible, and it's untouchable at this moment in time. So we're continuing our incredible partnership with Sky and the BBC, but we will be looking to stream our other games and make them available to UK and worldwide audiences as we build our fan base.
Claire, how excited are you to get this out there finally?
I'm really excited. I feel for the people that are going to be disappointed by this news. I'm very confident in the decisions we've made. I've always said we have to make difficult decisions as long as we can stand by them and we know that they're right for the sport. What we're building now is for the future, and we have to get this bit right. But you know, there's going to be disappointment, and for that, I feel for those little kids who are going to be told your club's not here, and they're going to feel that. But this is an exciting new era, and I just can't wait to talk to it. I've hated not being able to talk to it. So a real mixture. I'm not going to lie, I'm also absolutely exhausted. It has been genuinely, we have worked every second of every single day. Yeah, it's amazing. And I just can't wait for it to be out there.
Oh, it's absolutely fascinating, and such a lot of information for you to get out of your brain, get across to us. And it's so, so interesting. Let me try and round up what you've said. So these are what I think the headlines are for Netball Super League 2025. The ambition for at least 50% of games to be played in arenas. Fans able to watch every game. That's brilliant news. New club owners and new investment models. A reduction in teams to create a more competitive league. A reduction in squad sizes with top talent across different teams. And increased salaries. Have I got that just about right?
Yay! Great job. I know, what a launch. You know what? That was actually lovely for me to just listen to that back and just realise how much work we've done this year, and actually what this moment represents. We don't have all the answers, and there's loads still to build. And I always talk about co-creation. I want people around the table with us. I want players. I want to hear from fans. You know, the clubs, we're all going to build together, and that's really exciting. But it's really nice to have gone through a really challenging few months and to have landed with such an exciting kind of compilation of great news stories and exciting headlines.
Yeah, it feels to me like there's more interest and knowledge, actually, real appetite for netball than ever before. Final question, what's your one wish for Netball Super League 2025?
Oh gosh, there's millions. That the fans show up, that and new fans, that people just don't go, oh, that's nice that you've done that. Like, this is all for fans, and I've said it for years. Fans unlock the sport, right? So the only way we make this work, the only way clubs work, the only way the centre works, is by fans showing up. That demand, that appetite, those numbers, that engagement, those eyeballs, they drive all of our commercials. And that is what's fueling us on this journey. So those 3 million that play, those the 52% of the population of women that we all sit there and we champion more for us, we need to show up now more than ever. We are all taking a huge leap into the future. We're all writing the checks. We're all doing the work. And we're doing it so that fans show up. So yeah, my one wish is that they get it and we create a movement like no other in women's sport.
There you go. Please come on this journey with us. Claire, thank you so much for your time on the podcast this morning and for telling us what you have been working on and your team for the last 9 months. It is brilliant news. No doubt today, because you're launching everything at once. You've got a million interviews. So I'm going to let you go, you know, and maybe book a holiday for, I don't know, maybe 6 years' time. That, yeah, you've got a day off in 6 years. How about that?
End of next season, maybe. End of next season. Thank you. That was, I loved that. It's always great to talk about what we're doing, but to do it with someone who just genuinely loves our sport as well and wants to celebrate where we are and where we're going. So thank you, Lindsay.
Absolute pleasure. Thanks for coming on. So there you have it, from the managing director of the Netball Super League herself. If you want to find out more about the road to professionalisation, there's more information on the England Netball website, and keep your eyes across the team socials as they're able to share more with you in the coming months. It's going to be fascinating, isn't it, to see what squads can be put together as we head into 2025. Change is always a process, isn't it, with ups and downs. But the big thing for me is the desire to develop our wonderful sport, to back ourselves, just like Claire said, as clubs, as players, and as fans in this proudly female-led sport. How brilliant that one day players might be able to have a full-time career in netball that pays well and has access to high-quality performance and environments. And even as I'm saying this, there's the culmination of the competition this year to enjoy. Who will claim that famous Super League trophy for the last time in the current format? I'll be commentating the games as we close out the regular season, and I can't wait to see you for the final in Birmingham too. Until then, I'll see you courtside.